This is John Boutte from New Orleans, Louisiana, and you're listening on 100.5 FM CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio. Keep on listening, baby.
This is Stark Raven on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
From 7 to 8 p.m., Emily.
Oh.
From 7 to...
Yes.
Oh, that's me. I'm supposed to read that.
From 7 to 8 p.m. Here we are, Cindy Lou.
Sorry.
It is 7:03. This clock says 7:03. Here you are. Welcome. Welcome to 2013.
Dark Raven.
Yeah,
we take a closer look at prisons and the psychiatric survivor movement.
We do.
We are live on air here on 100.5 FM, the first Monday of each month.
From?
7 to 8 p.m.
Here we are. It's the first Monday. That's why we're here.
You shouldn't give me these to read.
No. Well, you know, don't worry. If you missed this lovely live banter, you can always find our podcast archived till the internet crashes or whenever. It's on our website, prisonjustice.ca. My name is Emily Aspinwall.
And I'm Cindy Lou Griffith. In tonight's Deconstructing Psychiatry feature, poet, author, and activist Vanessa Fisher joins us in the studio to share her psychospiritual inquiry of the role of the dark side in her life. That coming up in a few minutes.
Conditions inside Canadian prisons are getting worse. The impacts of the Conservatives' tough-on-crime agenda are being felt by those living behind bars. These impacts and their aggressive changes to the prison system are the focus of recent letters and writing from prisoners that we received here at Stark Raven. So we'll share words from prisoners from those letters in the second half of today's show, that coming up in just about half an hour.
And all that and more in the next hours here on Stark Raven.
Hours? We're only here for one.
How come you got it plural?
Sometimes it seems like hours.
I have an influence over you because now you're...
Hours and hours. Someone's going to come on here at 8 o'clock and cut us off and say, you people go home. Get some sleep.
How's your knee, Emily?
It's okay.
Emily took a header off her
bike. Yeah, I did. So, excuse me.
Such a clot.
Yeah, thank you. All right. Well, thanks for sharing with everyone. But, you know, stay tuned to Stark Raven. Your community station CFRO, Vanessa Fisher, is here in the studio. She'll be talking with Cindy Lou Griffith, Deconstructing Psychiatry, in just a couple moments. Stay tuned.
In her exploration of madness and mysticism, Vanessa Fisher writes, "The role of the dark in its many myriad and mysterious forms has played a very formidable role in the unfolding and enfolding development of my life journey from an early age. At times, my brazen inquiries into the dark side have taken me into seductive energies and consuming obsessions that have pulled me into some of the most bizarre and life-threatening places I've ever navigated." Tonight, Vanessa joins us in the studio. Welcome here.
Thank you.
I am very happy to explore this inquiry that that you've been explicating on your website. And this also is in the dynamics of your global travel as a teacher, right?
Yes, and, teaching in different countries, yeah.
Yeah. So this dark side and the role that it's played in your life, was it beckoned by you? Is the engagement a conscious choice? And I want to talk as well about the social stigma and fear attached to the experiencing of this muse of madness. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, there's a lot there. First, thank you for having me. It's great to be here. And, I feel really honored to be able to talk about these topics and bring more awareness about them into the culture in general. I think there's a lot of negative stigma about not only madness, psych wards, experiences of mental illness, but also the dark side in general. To give just sort of a brief definition of how I talk about the dark side, because I think it has a lot of connotations for different people. And I tend to think about the dark side as, I've been calling it on my website, in my art, the liminal. And the liminal comes from the Greek word limnos, which means kind of in-between space. So the dark, pregnant, unknowing, the place of infinite potential. So I've been reframing the dark side as this kind of liminal space, which can house both, all the aspects of psyche and culture that have been pushed out of awareness. So those areas that we push out and think of as negative, the shadow side, if you want to call it, but also, the larger sphere of just potential, the unknown. So just that broad framework for understanding the dark side. My own journey with the dark side, I've often had, my father has said to me even that I kind of have this path with the dark side, and he's noticed it since I was young. And growing up with a mother who struggled with mental illness, and there was, definitely just a early trauma that I think affected my own development and my relationship to the dark. And then it just became sort of, I'm very sensitive to struggles that other people are going through. I've been in circumstances with people that are going through very difficult experiences, and I seem to have some karma around that. And that led, to a lot of struggles in my own life, different kinds of addictions, eventually, struggles with some potential psychiatric issues. So that's kind of the broad framing to start.
Mm-hmm. Where do I dive in? It's like, okay, I'll dive into the deep end, all right?
Go for it.
Okay, you don't
mind,
well.
We're intense. Here
yeah,
we go.
What the hell? Okay, so for me, Emily's going to dive in with us. Good, yay. For me, myself, it became a necessity to unlearn the fear of madness. And I think that my own experience of madness helped me to drop into a sense of compassion for my own journey, innate journey through those realms. And I was also able to retain myself by unlearning the fear around just letting go. What's been your experience around that? You've had an experience of madness.
Mm-hmm.
How has your experience interfered with, or was there an interference because of a fear factor? And did that come from within you, or was it pushed at you from outside?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a really good question, and I think it's a really big one in our culture. I think madness in general is a really, something that's feared by a lot of people, even if we're not conscious about it. I think, my own experience was that I was very, in a way, sensitive and compassionate to people who had different kinds of struggles, because I grew up with a parent who was struggling in that way. And I always thought I was very compassionate about the issues. And it was funny that coming more towards that experience in my own life, that I realized that I was actually carrying an underlying judgment in myself. It was okay for other people, but it wasn't okay for me to be experiencing or feeling that kind of weakness. And I think that then I realized there was actually there was an underpinning judgment that I wasn't conscious of, and an intense fear of going crazy myself, or having people around me see me as incompetent, those kinds of things. So my experience of going into those realms, I went into a very, very deep depression that just overtook my entire being. And I'd struggled with depression before, but this was something I couldn't get myself out of. And I think, you know, I often talk about, you know, I had a suicide attempt, but it was very much, I reframe it now, that it actually was a big cry for life, not for death. And very much that I didn't want to live my life in depression. Trauma often happens in our experience at a very pre-verbal level. And it's often an extreme experience, and sometimes to heal or work through extreme experiences, we have to do extremes. And I'm not recommending, you know, anything to anyone, and I would never say my experience was something, you know, people should do. But I look at my experience now is that there's not a lot of support in the culture for people to do those extremes, to go through what they need to go through to work through trauma. So sometimes we do extreme things to try to unhook something, and we don't even really know what's going on. Mm-hmm. When I entered into the psych ward, it was definitely like facing my worst fear. It was like the place that I, you know, never thought I would end up, where I was just terrified of ending up. And I had a lot of ideas and judgments about it. But actually getting there and being around the people there, you know, having, you know, my roommate who was getting electroshock therapy and, you know, had kids, and just the conversations and it unhooked something for me that I really needed to face into. And I think being there, too, I realized the thin line between normal and madness. That's really, like, probably most people aren't aware that it's a thin line. And people are going through all kinds of things. So, yeah, it brought a real compassion for me and a deeper understanding that helped me unhook something that I wasn't able to before.
So now that you've been through an experience which entered your being, your life, your experience, a karmic event. Now that's behind you. Do you think that it is possible to navigate madness in a conscious way, as a kind of that is there with people who are witnessing and guiding in a sacred space?
I think it's definitely possible. I think there's a lot of factors that make it complex. So I want to be sensitive to the complexity of these issues. I think the first thing I would say is that our culture in general is not really built for people going through these kinds of experiences in a way that would actually hold conscious space for them. So that's where it makes it hard, because, you know, we need alternative spaces when we're going through that kind of thing. And because there's not a lot of really healthy alternative spaces, we just have psych wards. I'm not trying to make all psych wards bad, but the holding space of a psych ward often isn't really conducive to healing. It wasn't for me. And yet I needed that space out of the culture, so I was still, in a way, glad to be there. I think, you know, some people, if there's times when medication can be useful just to help people get a certain functional level to be able to work through things. But there's also times when I think medication can actually hinder the healing process. So that's where it gets tough. I think everyone is very individual in what they're going through, and that's why we have to be really sensitive to, to really understanding these dynamics. And I think if there was more awareness about this in the culture, if it was more, there wasn't so much stigma around mental illness and the framing, then I think we would have a lot more, better containers for this. And I think that's something that still needs to grow in the culture. And until we have that, then, you know, I think medications sometimes are needed and these kinds of things for people to be functional. But it's a very, very hard one for me. It's a deep inquiry and pain in a certain way that I have for sure for people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, when that juncture occurred in your process work, your inner process work, where the treatment ascribed by psychiatric intervention no longer was fit the model that you needed to adopt in order for your healing process. Mm-hmm. So at that juncture, I'm curious about the challenges that you faced, the social challenges, friends, family, your own inner beliefs and challenges, yeah, inner, that they were reflecting back to you. Like, there's, if somebody who has had a mad experience and there's been an event that's scared people, mm-hmm, life-threatening, or just behaving in a way which is threatening to the community, mm-hmm, you know, things like that, it's very hard, I think, I've observed, for individuals to return to a confidence of saying, you know, I'm going to take ownership over all of my experiences, mm-hmm, and I am a competent person. To gain that back in yourself and then convince others at the same time while you're trying to gain it back. So it's like at your most vulnerable, you must convince the world outside that how strong you are and that you can make this journey and to, you know, have that support. So
yeah, I mean, my suicide attempt was when I was 20, I just turned 25 and I'm 29 now. So I honestly feel like it's only in the last year that I've really made the meaning that feels right for me about my experience. And I think it's been an ongoing process, but it took a long time to sort through, you know, not only death, but suicide and madness. All this brings up a lot for people in their own ways, and they're all going to have their own stuff around it, their own, you know, so it brings up stuff for people, and then you get everyone else's interpretations, you get the psychiatrist's interpretations, you get your family's interpretations, your friends, and then friends who don't want to deal with it. And so there's a lot to, I found a lot to sort through. I think I was joking with you before that there was a way in which I wish I could have done it all in private. Like, I wish I could have just done all of that, because the only thing I really regret is that I hurt people in my life. And so I just wish I could have done what I needed to do and had been in a certain environment where I could have saved people from, you know, that hurt. But I mean, that's part of the process too, right? So, I think that it's definitely hard to sort through all of that. How I did that was through my art process. My website, I kind of came out with my experience in a way about 6 months ago, 7 months ago, and started doing not only blogs, writing about my experience, poetry, and also I started doing dialogues with different experts around madness, mysticism, sexuality, and art, looking at the dark side. So that was a profoundly healing and reframing experience for me to understand my own experience and to also give back to other people. And I got a very good response on that. So that was a big, yeah. So I feel I'm now more confident in integrating that into my own experience.
Yeah. We want to talk about that dark dancer, the Dakini, you call it in your website, archetype, or Kali, and the world in which she emanates from is the dark side.
Yeah.
So
I mean, on my website, I definitely have a lot of poetry and writing about Kali, the Dakini, and I've talked a bit about my relationship to that, those archetypes.
Yeah.
And I would say that they've been there for a long time. I've had a very constant relationship with them, and I think sometimes they've been more destructive on my life. Other times they're very creative. And it's something that I think we have to develop in maturity and relationship with, because those energies are quite powerful.
Yeah.
And in some ways, I think I opened certain things too early, but that was just my path. And I'm starting to find ways to cultivate it in a more artistic way. But yeah, it's definitely a kind of feminine type presence, something, you know, liminal and infinitely creative. And yeah, so I don't attach too much to any one label of it, but I do find the archetypes helpful for a certain kind of orientation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what interests me. What interests me, well, I know how archetypal images, I know the value and the great assistance they've been for me in traveling through some places. And the way that I got in touch with those archetypal images was through art practice and being a painter and drawing since I was actually in my grade 7 math class. I taught myself how to draw. But I noticed a continuing pattern of the emergence of these figures of women and who were, it took me a long time to recognize them, but they were always producing something that was growing in me. Mm-hmm. And so that image would always mirror back to me what was a dynamic in my psyche.
Yeah.
So actually it was your father who told me about the Dakini's warm breath.
Mm-hmm.
Vanessa's a family friend, so I'm just... yeah. So the Dakini's warm breath, that's an archetypal image from Hindu culture, is it? Or yeah, is the Kali from the Hindu?
Kali's Hindu, Dakini's Tibetan, I think.
Tibetan. Right. And so she is destructive and creative. She generates life and also disintegrates and shatters life. So, of course, that's all about the ego and eros.
And she kind of uses whatever means necessary to kind of break you to truth, right? So in a way, I mean, change is always a risk, right? And definitely development to these, like if you want to call it a kind of spiritual development or, you know, working through these more dense aspects of ego, I think it is always a kind of dangerous proposition. And she kind of has a, like, no holds back kind of approach to that, that particular archetype. Mm-hmm. And I think that can be both incredibly powerfully transforming or destructive. Mm-hmm. She's always been there in my experience. So it's just for me more about learning how to develop a healthy relationship to that energy and cultivate it and transmit it in skillful ways with other people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's a way of opening up a very personal realm in a way in which we all share that collective identity of those,
definitely,
those of that profile.
Well, and to take it to a
it's collective.
Yeah, to take it to the wider level of just what's happening on the planet in general right now. Things are definitely in a kind of state of chaos, and being able to work with those kind of energies, I think, is really important. So,
yeah, to share them in community and develop a dialogue. In that sense, your website is quite phenomenal because you are in touch with people in a aspect, in a global sense, however, more directly with the countries that you've visited on your travels. So could you tell us a little bit about your journey in Korea? And you were there teaching English, mm-hmm. and you, in your interest in activism, got involved.
I was in Korea for a year and then Russia for 6 months. In Korea I did some volunteer work with an organization that works with bringing awareness about the comfort women in Korea. So these were the women who were enslaved during the Japanese war by the Japanese as sex slaves throughout when they went through China and different parts of Asia. Mm-hmm. So they ran a museum there to bring awareness about the issues. Mm-hmm. And then there's a few surviving comfort women left. So I had a chance to meet them and just be part of that initiative, which was very powerful. Mm-hmm. And I definitely, I'm drawn to these kind of these darker issues or the aspects mm-hmm. of history that have been pushed down or forgotten, because that's definitely in Korea, the comfort women are still trying to get recognition for what happened. So, it fits in with the kind of interests and path I've had for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's a interesting mix of interviews. You have an interview site where you speak with many, many people from many walks of life, mm-hmm. but in particular, there's an emphasis on people who are doing work to open up an awareness of those hidden issues that perhaps we don't talk about enough, or we really need to inquire at length mm-hmm. to get to where we should be with certain aspects of ourselves. And there's lots of educational tools on self-development, I think, on your website.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the dialogues mm-hmm. really range. It's kind of a global inquiry, but I range from issues around, you know, building leadership in post-war Africa mm-hmm. with a woman who works, you know, with women in Africa, to issues about madness and mysticism, to sexuality, to the shadow, to a range. So it's a real range, but they all kind of find a way to sort of fit together in an interesting way.
Mm-hmm. And just to wind up our interview, mm-hmm. I want to ask you about your personal narrative with respect to rebirth and this path that you're on. And you've touched on a few things already, but can you sum it up and give us a... your aspiration and dream of this turning point in your life. Mm-hmm. You're embarking on another journey mm-hmm. once again to Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, using the rebirth analogy is interesting too, because I was thinking about archetypes, and we were talking about the kind of feminine or the dark feminine, and this all sort of ties into the lineage of with my mother, and there's also other people in my family who have definitely struggled around mental illness issues, or, you know, there's definitely a lineage there. And I think in a way, you know, that archetype of the mother is such a powerful archetype in our lives and our development, and certain fractures in that can really impact a lot of areas of our life and development. So it's been like my ongoing like art and journey, even on a, like a non-personal level, to really work with this archetype. And I think it's also made me, it's made me who I am, definitely a certain ways I see the world. And I also feel in a certain way that I've seen so much, like I don't feel afraid of the dark in the way that I used to. Like, there's a certain beauty to having been through a lot that, you're just not afraid of the dark in the same way. And I feel also a much more intimate relationship with the unknown and being willing to take risks and just, you know, be intuitive and be, you know, in myself. So that's part of, you know, my path. And I think rebirthing then through this kind of, you know, again, the mother relationship, it's been this, like, I've been inquiring through this archetype and my own experience, and now kind of rebirthing myself in a way through all of that.
Shedding a skin
shedding
winning
a certain
something
skin, for sure.
New and a new life form.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, and I'm building. For me, it's about building like a new trust in the universe, mm-hmm. That I've struggled with having before. So, mm-hmm. So yeah, and that's taking me on these journeys and into all kinds of new experiences. So,
and we have a poem that you've brought.
Yeah. So,
and I
want to finish with the poem.
Yeah. Will you?
That okay? Yeah.
That would be lovely.
Okay. So, this poem I actually wrote when I was in the psych ward. So. During my 2 weeks there, I put this poem together. So it's just called Untitled. Fear grips these tender limbs. Something unknown moves deep within. A weight that sinks, a cry for something indistinct. An amorphous chaos of forgotten words, seasoned wounds, and silenced screams. They quiver like ripples on a dark unknown sea. An abyss that now dangles beneath my feet. A paved street, a song stuck on repeat. A pitiful sight I am, a branch in a hurricane attempting to plant roots, an earthworm squirming on pavement under the sun's hot admire, my limitations curling and coiling under the heat of love's fire. I'm stuck again, with no light to guide me, no roadmap beside me, no insight to find me, just this love for truth at the core of my heart that continues to tear my world apart. I pray every night that I might burn at God's altar, but not falter by scorching the lives of those that I love. But like an infant trying to live by love's hand, I'm often humbled that I can barely even stand, as the pain of truth feels too immense to bury, yet too heavy for my human heart to carry. And so I ask, where was God when Eve dove deep and Eden fell from under her feet? And where was God when serpents cried and beauty died in the wake of her absence? And I kneel and beg, please God, show me the good within, but I only continue to shed sin's second skin. Because virtue is a composite, composed of its opposite, and the more one seeks and speaks of love, the more one meets their own limitation and invites false imitation. The more one is forced to become a bottom dweller, a fearless propeller, piercing the truth of their own confusion, which unfolds in ever subtle layers of delusion, a violent intrusion on the image of who we once thought ourselves to be. And I ask God, what is the point of all this pain? And God does not refrain. Compassion. It's through pain that compassion deepens. Everything else will eventually weaken.
It's beautiful, Vanessa. That's very beautiful.
Me.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming. And I have been speaking with Vanessa Fisher. And Vanessa is a poet, activist, and author. Vanessa, will you just say your web address for us,
oh,
please?
Oh, sure. So it's vanessadfisher.com.
Yeah, go there. There's a lot to see and a lot to experience. You are listening to Start Raven on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
We're going to go now to a song by Gentleman Reg. This is Driving the Truth off his new Leisure Life album. We'll be back in a couple minutes. We're going to have Voices from the Inside, which is our feature where we read writings and letters from prisoners. So stay tuned to Stark Raven here on your community station, 100.5 FM.
left hand shade painted on gray. A little effort really wouldn't hurt. Gaze right through and out my head. I said flutter, looking for something better instead. When I'm right here, concentrate. Conversation takes to the orchestra. Greater problem, boring concern. No design to solve. It's a driving trip, stretching out. Who would know that if I stand on the path?